This is the Jill Bennett Show on 730 CKNW.
Thanks for being with us on this Monday afternoon. Well, this was a very high-profile case and one that raised a lot of questions about being found not criminally responsible. Talking about the case of Blair Donnelly. He is the man behind a stabbing that took place in 2023 in Chinatown. It ended last week, as you may have heard in the news, with a not criminally responsible verdict due to a mental disorder. The Supreme Court ruling that Donnelly, who has a long history of serious mental illness and delusion, was incapable of understanding that his actions were wrong. He was on unescorted leave from the BC Forensic Psychiatric Hospital at the time of the incident, and that is the same hospital where he was detained after also being found not criminally responsible for killing his daughter back in 2006. This case, again, has sparked some outrage, and it has sparked a lot of questions about how this actually works. And joining me now is Rob Danhew, former federal Crown prosecutor, criminal defense lawyer, and co-founder of the Danhew Dhaliwal Law Group. Thank you, Rob, for coming back on the show.
Good to be here, Jill.
Can we start with the definition? And again, I know this case has sparked a lot of anger in people, but what exactly is the definition? How does not criminally responsible due to a mental disorder work in Canadian law?
Okay, so before we get into the mechanics and even the definitions, we really can't make sense of the Donnelly case unless we take a step back and understand why we have the laws that we do, as well as the state of our science. And I'll get into the definition as well. But in terms of the law itself, we recognize today, because of our history of dealing with individuals who are mentally ill, that it was quite barbaric. You know, we went from drilling holes in people's skulls to release evil spirits, to lobotomies, which continued in Canada until the 60s and 70s, and to locking up people in insane asylums for the rest of their lives. So mentally ill individuals were treated as if they had no rights. And essentially, we've tortured, even killed, maimed people up to the way our modern laws now exist. Now, the conflict in the Donnelly case, and in all cases involving mentally ill people, is the state of our science. So psychiatry and psychology is not an exact science. So when you go for an x-ray and there's a broken bone, most doctors will agree, look, that's a broken bone. But experts often disagree on mental health issues. So we're a lot better at understanding mental health today. But on the other hand, we're still using electroshock therapy to treat depression. And one day we'll look back on that as being barbaric. So the conflict with the Donnelly case in all cases is that we're trying to balance the rights of mentally ill people because of our terrible past with an inexact science, and sometimes we get it wrong.
All right, and that makes a lot of sense. And I think even one of the quotes from the judge in this case says the court doesn't convict people for being sick. But I think there are still a lot of questions, though, about somebody, because not only was this individual just found not criminally responsible this past week, but as we heard in the news reports and as we knew, he had also been found not criminally responsible for another murder back in 2006.
Absolutely. So in terms of the actual definition of what it is to be NCRMD or not criminally responsible due to a mental disorder, the defense has to show that at the time that the events occurred, that the mental disorder made the person either incapable of understanding what they were doing or whether they could distinguish between what is right and what is wrong. So the doctor back in 2006 found that Mr. Donnelly was NCRMD. So he's been in hospital since 2008. And what happens when an individual is found NCRMD in courts, you don't get acquitted. You don't get convicted, but rather there's a third option, which means you get sent to the BC Review Board. So you're essentially hospitalized. And so what occurs there is that you have a judge in that review board, and there's four professionals, legal and medical professionals, and they can do three things with individuals who are declared NCRMD. They can either discharge them completely if there's no risk to the public. They can conditionally discharge them where they're released into the public on conditions and supervision, but they don't require hospitalization, or they can detain them in a hospital, which is what happened back in 2008 with regard to Mr. Donnelly.
So was it a breakdown in the system? And again, I get that the judge also said we don't convict people for being sick, but I believe this was the third time this individual had been found not criminally responsible for a crime. Is it a breakdown in the system that he had been released, that he was out and even able to carry out the attack in Chinatown?
Yeah, so we have a history. So Mr. Donnelly has been in hospital since 2008 when he's originally found NCRMD for unfortunately killing his daughter. He was then released at one stage in 2009. He stabbed a friend while out on day pass. In 2000, 2017, he was found NCRMD again for attacking another psychiatric patient. Then in 2023, we have the stabbing incident in Chinatown. So what is happening here is exactly this conflict, which I explained on the front end, which is the review board, which can designate its powers to the hospital where Mr. Donnelly is trying to balance these fundamental rights. Even Mr. Donnelly has the same rights as every other citizen, that he has a fundamental interest in his freedom, and he's allowed to be released if it's safe to do so, with doctors assessing him. So what's happened here is that doctors have assessed him back in 2009 and 2017, found that he was stable for some time, and they felt that he could be released under conditions into the community. Unfortunately, what's happened is that although he was stable at the time of the assessment, the doctors could not predict or did not predict that he was still unstable enough where he could suddenly turn and cause violence. And so obviously there's a public safety risk here.
Right. And his lawyer argued that the review board didn't make any error here because given the evidence they had, that was the correct decision. So does that show that maybe we need more attention paid? Or I guess, is there a way, I mean, people will hear that and hear the number of times this individual has been found not criminally responsible and wonder, well, how on earth is this person still being given unescorted leave? But is it based on the amount of evidence that goes to the review board? And does that maybe need to change?
It could, yeah. Well, once again, this is where the flip side of the coin is, the state of our science is not, you know, we've come a long way, but there's a long way to go. So what's happening here is, look, I'm not a doctor, but I think we're at a stage here when this individual has been released three times where even most doctors would have to concede that even when, if Mr. Donnelly is fine, when he's assessed at the time, and maybe he's even looked fine for 3-4 years, they simply cannot predict what's going to happen when he's released into the public. And if they can't predict that based upon his past history, which is now clear, three times he's gone out and committed violence, then it may be that we have to err on the side of continued hospitalization based upon his history in order to ensure public safety over Mr. Donnelly's rights.
Right. And how much does it go into, I would imagine that the history has to be a big part of the decision making, or is it more like you said, it's based on the stability at the time?
Yeah, so these are medical questions, but certainly the doctors will be looking at all of the history that Mr. Donnelly has, and then they'd be assessing how has he been doing under treatment, and then they'd be looking at both of those factors as well as a number of other factors. Unfortunately, I think at this time we have to concede that regardless of how Mr. Donnelly is at the time of assessment, there is quite a bit of risk if he's released into the community, and we have to proceed on that basis while keeping in mind that he has these fundamental freedom interests. But at some stage, the public safety interest has to be weighed as more important than Mr. Donnelly's rights.
Right, because, and I think that's what people are going to see and question from this latest finding of not criminally responsible is what happens next? What happens the next time this case comes before the BC Review Board?
So he goes back, this is one of those sort of revolving door situations where he goes right back into the blunder, so to speak, and he's going to go be assessed again. He has to be assessed every 12 months at a minimum, and he can raise earlier assessments up if he wants on his own. But he's going to be looked at by the review board. They're going to consider once again, should he be absolutely discharged, should he be conditionally discharged, or should he be detained in a hospital? And I would hope that the review board certainly puts a high level of weight on now three breaches of his when he's been released.
And Rob, I'm not sure if this is a question you can answer, but I was looking at this case and I was thinking about the fact that sometimes we have police departments that will put out a warning if somebody is released, and often it's with convicted sex offenders, and police will put out the warning, won't say exactly where he is, but they'll say this person has been released into this city and we believe this person is a high risk to reoffend. It doesn't happen very often, but there are cases when police do that and they'll put out a photo. Is that possible in a case like this, or are there more strict guidelines if police take that step?
Yeah, so that's entirely up to the discretion of the police. So they weigh the public safety component with an individual's privacy rights. And when they feel that the public interest component is strong enough, they will make that release. And certainly it's not just with the sex offenses. If they feel someone's dangerous, they can also make that type of announcement. It's a whole different discussion, though. There's a lot of cons to those announcements as well. But yeah, certainly they can do so.
Do you think in this case, does the system need to be looked at and perhaps changed? Or, I mean, this is an extraordinary case. Thankfully, we don't see a lot of cases like this on a regular basis. But does it show that there are gaps that should be looked at? Or is this again, just a case that is, well, not just, but is this something that we don't see very often?
Anytime there's a failing in the system, it needs to be looked at. The backdrop, once again, though, is the law. So the law from the Supreme Court of Canada is that the board has to order a release under the least onerous and least restrictive conditions possible. So that's the backdrop. But when you have a failure, you have to look at the system right from the top to the bottom to try to help ensure it doesn't happen again. And that would be, taking a look at whether your analytical tools are rigorous enough and why this decision was made in the first place.
Rob Daniu, we'll leave it there for today. I appreciate you coming back on the show. Thank you.
My pleasure.
That is Rob Daniu, a former federal crown prosecutor, a criminal defense lawyer, co-founder of the Daniu Dhaliwal Law Group.